जयो राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपीजना बौआ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीजना बौआ गिरिवर धारी ईश्वरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना ईश्वरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरा वन चारी गौ राधा माधव कुंज विहारी कुंजविहारी जय गोपीजना गौरा गिरिवर धारी गोपीजना गौरा गिरिवर धारी ईश्वरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना ईश्वरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुन तीरावन सारी यमुन तीरावन सारी गौ राध माधव कुंज विहारी गौ राध माधव कुंज विहारी
विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य विष्णोतरस्त श्री श्रीमदेश भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय गीताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय हा गौ श्री समदवती हा गौ श्री समदवती हा गौ श्री समदवती हा गौ श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa. Today, text number 36 and 37. 36, the word meanings. Kim, what is there to fear? This is the advisors of Kamsa speaking. Kshema, in a place where there is a scarcity of the ability to fight, Shurai, by the demigods, Vibhudai, by such powerful persons, Asanyuga Vikatanai, by boasting and talking uselessly away from the fighting, Raha Jusha, who is living in a solitary place within the core of the heart, Kim Harina, what is the fear from Lord Vishnu, Shambhuna, and what is the fear from Lord Shiva, Va, either, Vana Okasa, who is living in the forest, Kimandrena, what is the fear from Indra, Alpavirena, he is not at all powerful, having no power to fight with you, Brahmana, and what is the fear from Brahma, Va, either, Tapasyata, who is always engaged in meditation. Kinkshema Shurar Vibhudhar Asanyuga Vikatanar Raho Jusha Kim Harina Shambhuna Vavakavanakasa Kiam Indrena Pavirena Ramana Vatapasyata King Shema Shura Vibhudha Asanyuga Vikattana Raho Jusha Kim Harina Shambhuna Vavinaukasa Kimindena Pavirena Ramana Vatapasyata Kim Shema Shura Vibhudha Asanyuga Vikattana Raho Jusha Kim Harina Shambhuna Vavinaukasa Kimindena Pavirena Brahmana Vatapasyata Kinshema Shura Vibhudha Asanyuga Vikattana Raho Jusha Kim Harina
Tapasyata
translation. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods we have nothing to fear. As for Lord Vishnu, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he is always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods headed by Indra are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa's ministers told Kamsa that all the exalted demigods had fled in fear of him. One had gone to the forest, one to the core of the heart, and one to engage in tapasya. Thus you can be free from all fear of the demigods, they said. Just prepare to fight. Text 37. Tathapi deva sapat jnan nopiksha iti mammahe tatastanula khaname niyantrasman anuvratan. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. The Prabhupada's purport. According to moral instructions, one should not neglect to extinguish fire completely, treat diseases completely, and clear debts completely. Otherwise, they will increase and later be difficult to stop. Therefore, the ministers advised Kamsa to uproot his enemies completely. I'm going to read the next verse, although it's not a sign, but it's the same idea being talked about. As a disease, if initially neglected, becomes acute and impossible to cure, or as the sense of it, if not controlled at first, are impossible to control later, an enemy, if neglected in the beginning, later becomes insurmountable. Oma jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun nilitan mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. King Shema Shura Vibudha Asunyava Ikatamai Rahu Dusha Kim Harina Shambhuna Baba Naokasa Kim Indanao Pavirina Brahmana Bata Pasyata. These advisors of King Kamsa, and we know the circumstances here, Kamsa had sort of turned around a little bit, apparently, after speaking with Vasudeva and Devaki. He felt some kind of remorse for what he had done. His motives aren't quite clear, but he seemed to express some sadness, and he wanted them to take pity on him. And Vasudeva and Devaki said, okay, that's fine. So everything seemed nice. But then as soon as Kamsa gets with his advisors, they start talking in another way. No, we have to fight. We have to fight with these demigods. And now is a good time to do it, because they are eternal enemies, so this is a good time to fight. And they explain here in this verse the reason why they should fight now. First, they say the demigods are, they're always just boastful. They talk about fighting, but they can talk like that when they're not around. When there's no fight around, they can talk like that. We see people like that too, don't we? People who have a lot to say, except when the challenge comes, then they can't back up their words. I was thinking in the context of Krishna consciousness too, we can speak so much philosophy, but when the challenge comes, do we rise to the challenge? When we really have to act Krishna conscious, when we're put in a circumstance where doubts can arise, we can doubt Krishna, we can wonder what's going on here. I really like that example that Tamalapabu gave the other day about how karma is like throwing a ball at a wall and it just bounces right back to you. But for a devotee, it's like you're throwing it to a person so that person can just come and give it back to you. But my immediate thought was, well, if you throw it to a person, they can do whatever they want with it. They can return it, they can turn a high, hard one, as they say in baseball. They can return it as a fastball or a curveball, or they can take the ball and go home, or they can do whatever they want with it. So that's what Krishna does. He can do whatever he wants with it. So sometimes it seems like Krishna's throwing us curveballs. He's not handing it gently to us, but he's throwing us curveballs or fastballs. So as when those come at us, then it's time to back up our talk and all our philosophy, all of our reading and speaking of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Then we have to back it up with our action. So anyway, the demons here, they're saying the demigods, they can talk a lot. When, as long as there's no real fight going on, they can talk, but we don't need to worry about them because they're just afraid and they're just hiding away from the battlefield. So then, Raho Jusha Kim Harina. So Harina means of Hari, Lord Vishnu. We don't have to worry about Vishnu either because he's hiding in the hearts of his devotees. He's, of course, Vishnu says that's, no, I'm not. Naham Tishtami Vaikunte Yoginam Ribayeshuva. He says, I'm not in Vaikuntha and I'm not in the hearts of the devotees or the yogis. Yatra Gayanti Madbhakta Tatra Tishtanti Narada. He says, I'm where my devotees are chanting my glories. So they think that Vishnu's hiding in the hearts of the devotees, but actually he's everywhere because the devotees are always chanting Krishna's glories. So he's always available. He's always on call for the devotee in dire circumstances. The prime example of that, of course, is, well, we have a couple of very nice graphic examples. We have Prahlad Maharaj, how Lord Vishnu appeared. And we have Draupadi. She threw up her hands. Govinda. Krishna came and protected her. So there are many examples. So Krishna, of course, he is in the heart. There's no question of that. But it's not like he's hiding out there. He can be in the heart and outside the heart. Antyad bahiravastitam. Kunti Devi says that you are within everyone's heart. This is her very first prayer to Krishna. That you're within the heart, you're within everything, which includes the heart, and you're also outside. But nobody can see. The general people in general, can't see where you are, even though you're actually inside and outside of everything. So even if Krishna is within the heart, he's certainly not hiding there out of fear. In fact, we see what happens when the demigods are really in trouble, then they call on Vishnu. Because, actually the demigods, they don't really want to fight. They're peace-loving, they're devotees. Prabhupada says the demigods have all the good qualities possible in the material world. One place he says like that. So they, in fact, we just probably quoted the verse. I guess it was on, was it in Friday's purport? Yasyasti bhakti bhagavati yakinchana sarvayaganastatara samasate sura. Devotees have all the good qualities. So the demigods, they have good qualities. So they're not itching for a fight. The demons are always itching for a fight. They're the aggressors. The devotees have to protect themselves. They have to uphold dharma. They have to uphold righteousness. They have to uphold morality, what's right. So they also have to learn how to fight, but they're not hiding away in fear. But when the trouble becomes severe, then they call on Lord Vishnu, who of course is not, he also is not one to start fights. But when he's called upon by the devotees, Indrari Vyakulam Lokam, Madayanti Yuge Yuge, Indrari, the enemies of Indra, he comes to protect the devotees, the demigods, from the enemies of Indra, Indra being the head of the demigods, in one sense, king of the heavenly planets. So when they're in danger, then Lord Vishnu, he comes out when the time is right. But he's not looking for a fight. Of course, if he is, he does it with his devotees. We know that too. He gets Hiranyakshin, Hiranyakashipu, and so on. His own devotees, Jai and Vijay, to fight with him. So he's not, certainly not cowering in fear of the battle. as these demons are saying here. So then they mention Shambhuna, Shambhu Lord Shiva. We don't have to worry about him because he's living in the forest. So like Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva also, he's not interested. You know, Vishnu is above it all. And Lord Shiva also, he's not interested in all these petty squabbles from his point of view, these things that are going on in the material world, these petty arguments going on, even when they're big arguments and big fights, from the perspective of someone like Lord Shiva, they're just like children fighting. There's no great significance to it. So Lord Shiva, he just meditates on Lord Vishnu. That's what he wants to do. He wants to stay away from it all. So sometimes he gets involved, but not so often. He's not there for every fight. Sometimes he'll come out of compassion for those like Lord Vishnu, when those were below him. Because compared to Indra, Lord Shiva, of course, is so exalted. He's in a completely different category. So he's not involved in these squabbles that go on here in this world. He's situated above it all. So he's certainly not hiding in fear in the forest, cowering from the great power of the demons. Then Indra is mentioned. So Indra, of course, his character is sometimes questionable. But he's described here as Alpavirena. We heard about Alpa the other day in class. Pushkar was mentioning Alpa Buddhaya, Alpa Medhasa. Alpa means small. The demigod worshippers in Bhagavad Gita are described as Alpa Medhasa. They have small intelligence. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we hear Prayanalpa Isha Sabhya Kala Asmin Yugajana. In Kali Yuga, Prayana Alpa, or Prayana Alpa Ayusha. Ayusha means lifespan. Prayana means in general, Alpa. Alpa means small, short. So everyone in Kali Yuga in general has a very short lifespan. So Alpa, so here they're describing Lord Indra as Alpa Virya, means he has no virya. Virya means potency, power. Has no strength really. But this of course is, you can talk like that unless you're fighting with Indra. Then you'll see how powerful he is. He has the thunderbolt. He can knock off the tops of mountains. He's very, very powerful, Deva. Indra on his Aravata, he can fight and kill thousands and thousands of enemies. Certainly a Maharata, King Indra, very powerful. So this is, of course, they're trying to demean Indra because they're rascals. They want to dishonor him. He's the enemy, so speak bad about him. Of course, this goes on in competition. We see when Krishna was fighting with, when Lord Varaha was fighting with Hiranyaksha. So back and forth, calling each other names and so on, taunting each other. So this is also part of the Kshatriya spirit, get the adrenaline pumping so you can fight. Prabhupada says the Kshatriyas, they look forward to it. Naturally, they look for the opportunity. Of course, they also look for the opportunity because they gain merit by it. One fights a righteous fight, if the Kshatriya fights a righteous fight, then they gain merit. They can gain their heavenly planets, actually. Krishna says that to Arjuna. Why are you giving up this opportunity to fight? If you fight in the battle, you'll be meritorious. Especially, and if you're victorious, then people will honor you and your name will be sung for thousands of years. So for this reason also, sometimes they like to fight. So the atmosphere is built up before the fight. You can just imagine before the Battle of Kurukshetra what it was like. All these thousands, millions of people are coming there. And you can just, like we say, chomping at the bit. You know, the horse is chomping at the bit. So the horses were chomping at the bit, and a lot of the fighters were too. All right, now it's time, we're going to fight. All right. And Arjuna says, no, let's forget it. Let's go home. So I'm sure they were, especially Bhishma, he's like, what? I mean, Bhima, excuse me. Bhima, he was really always ready to fight, tear someone's head off. So this was the situation there. So this goes on. Those who are very powerful, they're ready for it. So Indra is certainly in that category. He doesn't flee from fights, generally speaking. Of course, Indra, he's kind of a contradictory person. He's quite an enigma, Lord Indra. He does a lot of different strange things, and wonderful things and strange things both. And then Lord Brahma is mentioned here. Of course, Brahma also, he tends to not, he's way above. If you look in the fifth canto, the Bhubhuvar Swa. So this is just the first three. There's seven upper planetary systems. So Swargaloka is only the third one up. Then you have Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, then Brahmaloka. So where Brahma lives, that's way up there. Way up there. Way up high. Of course, I don't know if it's actually up, but that's the way we can see of it. That's the way it's drawn. But at least conceptually, it's up. It's way beyond us. So Lord Brahma, he exists practically in the spiritual world. What does he do? He fills his days with Krishna Katha, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He's an extremely exalted soul, the head of our sampradaya. He gets direct darshan of Krishna. So what does he have to do with what's going on between Indra getting into trouble all the time and these other rascals down here? Asuras are always fighting. So it says these asuras here, they say, he's always engaged in meditation, like Lord Shiva. Or austerity, of course he heard the occult sound, as Prabhupada calls it, the occult sound, tapa. Tapa means meditation. So he engages in meditation, especially his meditation is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in its expanded form on his planet. So there are not, obviously, these personalities, these asuras can speak this way, but they really don't know what they're talking about. Huh? What is that? There's a Bengali saying how Pavala, I used to know it, a goat will eat anything and a fool will say anything. Is it? Pagala kina bole, chagala kina kai. A chagala, goat will eat anything and a pagala, crazy person, will say anything. So this is kind of funny. I learned this verse many years ago, and I remember I was giving class at the tournament, and the vice mayor of Calcutta was there, so naturally he's Bengali, and I quoted this verse, which is Bengali, right? Is it Bengali or is it Hindi? Bengali, right? So after class he was so impressed by quoting this Bengali saying. So anyway, this is the point, the fool will say anything. So these foolish people are saying this here and there. But, of course, we'll see who gets the last laugh here. So then, of course, in the next verse, they say they should be uprooted completely. Now's the time. We should uproot them completely. Because even though they're powerless, right now they may be resting, but, you know, they're our enemies after all. So we should go get them now. Strike while the time is right. Kill them while they're sleeping. And this is, of course, what the rascals would do. Kill them while they're unprepared, in other words. So this is certainly non-chivalrous, immoral. So Prabhupada says in the purport that this is a kind of a moral instruction. Now, I don't know, Prabhupada uses the word morality kind of loosely, it seems like. It seems like it's his translation of the word niti. Chanakya niti. So we say Chanakya's moral codes. So I'm not sure if this is a moral code to kill your enemies while they're unprepared. We would say this is immoral to do that. So some of the other things Prabhupada mentions here as moral instructions. Extinguish the fire completely. I'm not sure if that's a moral code. Maybe Smokey the Bear is telling you to do it. So extinguish a fire completely, treat diseases completely, and clear debts completely. So of course, one way we can look at these as morality is because they tend to have an effect on other people. Morality means what is right and what is wrong. That's really how you boil it down, what is right and what is wrong. Of course, then the natural question is, well, who decides? What is the standard by which one determines what is right and what is wrong? Now, we say, of course, the ultimate standard of morality, the judge of morality, is Krishna. What Krishna says, what Krishna tells you to do. If Krishna tells you to do something that is apparently immoral or generally immoral in ordinary circumstances, then it's morality. Yatra yogeshwara Krishna, yatra partu dhanurjaya. Tatra shriyar vijaya bhutir durva nitir matir mama. This is the very last verse of the Bhagavad Gita. So Sanjaya says, wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, then there's several things, including niti, druva. Druva means certainly, niti, morality. That is my opinion, Sanjaya says. Prabhupada says in the purport there, I don't have to read it, he says that the morality, the highest morality is revealed by Krishna in the ninth canto, manmana bhavamabhatto. Become my devotee, he says. This is the highest morality. Then he says, and the highest religious principle is sarvadharmam parichyaja mamekam sharanam braja. Of course, these are very, very closely related. You could say that morality and dharma is also, you could say, because what is dharma? It's about what one should do. What is the right thing to do? So morality is also about the right thing to do. So in either case, morality means to be Krishna's devotee and do what Krishna asks. Of course, the question of morality and Krishna consciousness is a big topic. I know Shesha Prabhu has taught seminars on this at Radha Desh, Morality and Ethics. Because I know sometimes devotees think, well, let's see, Prabhupada told us, we just follow the four of the principles, chant 16 rounds, and we're back to Godhead. So that's it. No meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, or gambling, chant 16 rounds, and I'll go back to Godhead. So not on that list, let's see, murder. I guess I can murder, that's okay. That's not, I'm not breaking away with one of four legs if I murder someone. Or you can think of so many things, you could say, well, that's not one of the regulative principles. I can beat my wife, that's not one of the four regulative principles. So obviously, that's not the right way to think. We also are supposed to be morality. That's why we need Prabhupada's instructions. They fill out the picture. Prabhupada wanted us to be moral. You know, his famous statement that we should be perfect gentlemen, perfect ladies and gentlemen. We're ambassadors for Krishna. We're representing Krishna. We're representing Prabhupada. We're representing the Parampara. So we have to be moral in the eyes of ordinary people. And just for our own sake, being immoral, it contaminates the heart. It's an association with the modes of ignorance and passion. The devotee is supposed to be in sattva-gun. So there are extreme circumstances where Krishna may request someone to do something immoral, but that's certainly not the normal standard of the devotee's life, and we can't use that as an excuse in our practice of Krishna consciousness. So the verse again. King Shema Shura Vibudha Asim Yoga Vikattamai Raho Jusha King Harina Shambhuna Abha Vimau Kasa King Indranao Pavirina Brahmana Abha Tapasyuta. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods, we have nothing to fear. As for Lord Vishnu, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he is always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. And the next verse. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. The Asura's pep talk. Pre-game talk. So any questions or comments? Swami Govinda Prabhu?
In India, I don't know in the West they have or not, but in India there is a Devi Bhagavatam, you probably heard it. Devi Bhagavatam.
Devi Bhagavat. Uh-huh.
It's composed by the smartos.
Oh.
Those who are misutilizing their free will, called mental speculation, they love that. Whereas our commentaries are given from the Suddhasatta platform by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, how to understand with Mishra Satta. But their commentary is fully given on this subject matter, on the based on false ego, miscalculation, or their way. So they explain this, Sanatana Goswami Pada explains, little difference. They also know all these pastimes, it apparently. So they give the version of Lord Brahma. I said, did you ever see him fighting in any war? No. You always see him eight eyes, halfway closed and meditating. So, Kamsa, you don't have any fear. And as for Shiva, they know the story of Ilabriti Varsha also. He said, do you know what happened? Instead of knowing the Bhrigu came and how it was little bit humiliation of Parvati, so she appealed to the Shiva that this is not good, they are seeing our intimacy time. So Lord Shiva made that proposition, okay, since from today, no male can enter into the Ilabriti Varsha. If it does, he will turn into female. But they take the story in a wrong way. They say, Lord Shiva, out of fear, he just live in a hiding place in a forest where he doesn't want to be in the human location. So, and anybody goes there, he will turn into female, so he never has to face fighting with the man. This is their speculation. And then Sanatana Goswami Pada father, he gives that, even Vishnu, he gives the quote of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. Even Hiranyakashipu, after he came out from the Mandar Hill, he was traveling everywhere to challenge anybody. Of course, Prabhupada writes that eyebrow moving made Indra completely frightened, every demigod would be frightened. And he traveled literally to find Vishnu. So why he could not find Vishnu? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also quote this, that because Vishnu has a place where no jiva conditioned soul can reach, that is called the heart. Heart is a place where require three modes transcend to enter into Vishnu. He is in the heart. Heart is the back home back to Godhead. We are trying to go back home back to Godhead. That is our heart. So Mahaprabhu says that bring the Lord in Gundicha Marjan, clean the heart so you can make the heart is the chariot and Lord will come and sit. So there they say that Krishna hide and Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha both could not find Vishnu because this is the one place they cannot trace. Even though they travel all over the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. But Devi Bhagavatam is very popular.
They can't get into their own heart.
Well, that's true, but you are saying Janmadi Rasa, Prabhupada said the sex psychology in the third verse in the purport he put. The one has to understand this sex psychology. This is Prabhupada is saying that in order to understand how this creation took place. So they say that this, like 16th chapter Bhagavad Gita, that everything based on product of sex. Without sex, you, me, nobody, nothing is created. So their whole base is on the sex. The same Adivas, they give the commentary. I was looking at it, it was very interesting, but it's very perverted. One should not read. If they don't have a Siddhanta, they will really fall in a trap.
Okay, we'll stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.